Save big on your landscaping project now at Menards. Whether you're installing a patio or a new retaining wall, Menards has the blocks you need to get the job done right. We carry the largest in-stock selection ready to take home today. Stop in and get our 12-inch smooth patio block on sale now. Save big on concrete landscape blocks at Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big.
Hi everyone, welcome to another episode of Little Fish. This is the show where we do away with our facts, the ones that we've spent time looking for, and we look at your facts, your brilliant, excellent, amazing facts that you send to us every week at podcast@qi.com. We will read through them, we'll chat about them, we'll give you a little bit of extra information that we found ourselves, and then we will go into our custodianship section where we hand out some facts to people who are in our Friend of the Podcast tier on Patreon. Anyway, without further ado, let's get into the facts. Dan, give us a fact.
Okay, this has been sent in by Fiona McDonald, and she says, I found out that cheese meltability is measured using a scale called the Schreiber scale.
Lovely.
Fantastic.
Says, I'll be honest, I haven't read the article in depth, but thought it sounded interesting. So
very,
thank you, Fiona.
Cool.
There was a company that was founded in 1945, which came to be known as Schreiber Foods. And it was founded by a man called L.D. Schreiber in partnership with his friend Merlin.
And can I just first think, German, are they?
No, they're North American, I believe.
I guess interesting to give your company a German name in 1945.
Yeah, well, they're massive. By the way,
are they?
Big cheeses. They provide the cheese slices that are used on 17 of the top 20 hamburger chains in America.
Wow!
So it's like they are massive, $7 billion in sales every year. They developed the Schreiber meltability test to monitor how cheese handles heat.
Didn't we have a live stage cheese eating competition with each other?
We did.
A record for the most cheese slices eaten in something like a minute.
I set up, while we were on tour, a chance for us to get a Guinness World Record. Mm. And Craig Glenday, editor-in-chief, came onto stage, pre-printed a certificate in case we managed it. And the four of us tried to eat as many slices. Now, it was an impossible task, I would argue. I don't think even the greatest cheese eater could manage it.
Like, the greatest cheese eater can manage it. That's the thing about the records.
This isn't a record. No one has ever set it.
We were so shit that we didn't even get the record that had never been set before.
Yeah, what a lot of people might not realize about the Guinness World Records is that you can't just, like, be, I'm the first person to do this, and this is where I got up to.
Yeah.
They set a bar of where the entry point for the record is, and I think it was 10 slices.
Wait a minute. I was the record holder on stage out of us, right? I got three or four slices. Mm. So that means I am a world record holder. I'm just not a Guinness World Record holder.
Yes. We need to make you a digital certificate.
Who on earth would want a digital certificate? That's all I want to know. We might come to that later. Is it true that Craig then had to destroy the certificate?
In theory, that's what he should have done.
He ate it.
Yes.
Yeah. And he ate it in record time, may I say.
But he unfortunately didn't take off the plastic, and so that caused huge, huge issues. No, I, old sneaky Schreiber here, I've got it in my house.
Have you really?
Wow. An illegal... Yeah.
An illegal Guinness World Record.
As you say this, an alarm's gone off in Guinness HQ, and a SWAT team has been dispatched to tear the house down if you have to.
And the worst thing is that the world's best SWAT team. Dan?
Yeah.
When he printed that certificate off, there was no name written on it, because he didn't know which of us was going to break the record.
Yeah.
Have you written your own name in there?
No, I think it said no such thing as a fish. What I did do in pen was add where it said they broke the record. I added in did not.
Very honest.
Okay, let's do another fact. Andy, what have you got for us?
I've got a fact from Alex Rogers.
Okay.
Which is that Ben Nevis is the highest point in the British Isles, but it's only the third highest, Ben Nevis.
Oh, that's great.
That's lovely.
There are lots of other places around the world, at least two, that have been named after Ben Nevis, and they're higher.
Where are they?
Australia?
You're so close. You're about, I want to say so close to Australia.
You're several hour flight away.
Yes, New Zealand.
Right.
There's one that's 1619 meters. There's one that's over 2000 meters. And Ben Nevis' original edition is only 1345.
Wow. I've climbed Ben Nevis. Have you guys climbed Ben Nevis?
No.
It was on my honeymoon. And me and my wife climbed it. And we got a guide who took us up there, even though there's only one path and you can't really get lost.
still follow me.
Is he holding the umbrella all the way up?
I remember going online and some people saying, should we get a guide or not? And then some people replying, yes, you should get a guide. But now I think back at it, maybe it was the guides who were writing those replies.
Yeah.
But no, he was very good, this person, and gave us some energy bars to eat on the way up and stuff that, and then took our photo when we got to the top.
I gotta say, James, you could have taken a selfie stick and an energy bar yourself. But I'm glad there are guides. And actually, people do get into difficulties. There are stories every single year of people going up basically in flip-flops. And then it turns out, the weather's turned really bad on this actually quite high mountain. And, James, did you see the piano?
No, I didn't see a piano, but people have brought them up, have they?
People have brought them up. Basically, in 2006, there were some litter pickers on Ben Nevis, and they found a grand piano. They were going through a pile of litter. Quite a big pile of litter.
They had one of those long plastic sticks with a claw on the end going, I can't get a good grip on it.
Basically, they found a massive grand piano 200 meters from the summit. No one knows how it got there. There was someone who carried a piano up for charity in 1980, but he took his down again. So it's really baffling. And there was a biscuit wrapper tucked inside, which said best before 1986, but that doesn't really tell you very much.
It's a lovely idea, by the way, of having an achievable mountain that has the name of a very hard, like, you know, if there was a lesser Mount Everest that was really achievable, that you could go, I've climbed Mount Everest.
That was like,
just in passing.
It was like the time when I entered the Boston Marathon, do you remember? And I was going to run the Boston Marathon, but it was just before COVID and then it got cancelled. But I did the one in Boston in Lincolnshire because that is it's the easiest marathon in the UK because Lincolnshire's so flat.
Very nice.
Okay, here is a fact from Lindsay Whelan. And Lindsay says that the length of the inch is based on the millimeter. What? But surely metric units are much newer than imperial units.
Yeah, an inch is 25.4 millimeters or something.
Correct.
Are you saying that they took the millimeter and they said, well, let's have 25.4 of these?
And that's exactly what I'm saying.
No.
It was the 1959 International Yard and Pound Agreement. And basically, all the different countries had different versions of the inch. And they all got together in 1959 and said, look, guys, we're going to have to standardize this. The US inch was 25.400508 millimeters, while the UK inch was 25.399977 millimeters. So if you measured something that was 2 and a bit miles long, the difference would be about a centimeter.
So that could be very important.
It's hard to imagine when, but like, let's say you're building a tunnel from New York to London.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then the difference can
and
be
you
quite...
stop and you think, well, we've measured it. We've dug the distance. We've said we should. It sounds like there might be something on 1 centimeter away. through that soil, but we're gonna go home now. We're not gonna
You wouldn't go home, you just keep digging, and eventually you'd get there and you'd end up with 2 tunnels. Okay, Dan, let's have another fact from you.
Yes, well, actually, I'm taking us back into the mountains. This is from Hayden Freeman, who says, as most people know, New Zealander's Sir Edmund Hillary was the first person to knock the bugger off and climb Mount Everest. But what few people will know is that fellow Kiwi Mark Inglis was the first person to climb Mount Everest as a double amputee.
Cool.
Yeah. This is someone who's quite a notable mountaineer, has written books and has been the subject of documentaries and so on. it's quite crazy. When he was climbing Everest, he actually broke one of the carbon fiber prosthetic legs in half. And so they had to temporarily fix it with duct tape while a spare was brought up from base camp to meet him so that he could swap it in.
Gosh.
Pretty wild. So New Zealanders have made quite an impact on Everest.
Well, they've had so much practice on the high Ben Nevis.
I was going to say, when Edmund Hillary climbed Mount Everest, has anyone checked that he didn't actually climb a mountain called Mount Everest in New Zealand?
I don't think that's been checked. That's a really good, that's a really good point.
Oh, dear.
Andy, let's have another.
Yes. This is a fact from Alistair Bowden, and we're staying in the mountains. I don't think we've ever covered this. It's a fact set on Mount Athos.
Oh, yeah.
Which is in Greece.
Yeah.
And it's that there's an 82-year-old Greek monk, Mihailo Tolotos, who reportedly never saw a woman in his entire life because he was born to a woman. And very sadly, his mother died when he was just a few hours old, and he didn't have any family, so he was taken to Mount Athos, this monastery, which is in Greece. It's quite remote, and there are no women allowed. And he lived 82 years. He died in 1938, I think, and the details are quite scant, but it appears that he lived there his whole life, and he just never saw a woman.
Yeah.
Also, he allegedly never saw a car, a plane, or a film, right?
Well, how did he not see a plane? They literally, Thessaloniki Airport is no more than 20 miles away from Mount Athos.
But maybe he died in 1938, so maybe the last few years of his life he was indoors. And, you know,
fair enough. In fairness, he didn't see an iPad either. Like,
no, he was born in 1856, so the first 40 odd years of his life, not seeing a plane was an absolute cinch, or a car,
yeah,
or a film.
I wouldn't include that on the list, the plane one, given that it hadn't existed for that long.
Women, on the other hand, had existed for centuries before that.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, here's a really good one. So this is from Ewan Hopper. Ewan wrote to us about the 1952 Texas gubernatorial election, which sounds unpromising, but the person who won that election was called Alan Shivers, and Alan ran for both the Democratic and the Republican parties in the same election. And the reason was that the Republicans knew that he was going to win, so there's no point putting anyone up against him, but they wanted to encourage people to vote for their candidate, Dwight Eisenhower, as the president. And they thought that people might not go for a Democrat and a Republican. They might want to stay on party lines. So if they made Shivers a Republican as well, then they might just tick Republican Shivers, Republican Eisenhower.
Are they allowed to do that?
Well, they did it, so yeah, I guess so. And Shivers got 1.8 million votes in total. Wow. 1.3 million of them came to him as a Democrat, and just under 500,000 came to him as a Republican. And he also got 664 votes as a no-party candidate. And that's where people wrote in about who they wanted to win, but didn't put the party in there.
Right. What a popular guy.
Yeah. He 1.8 million votes. No preference, got 36,672 votes. So 1.95% got
no. That's not bad.
It is. But the thing is, with no preference, if you've got two options and they're exactly the same, to me, no preference means I like them both equally. It doesn't mean I dislike them both equally.
That's a good point. If it's Alan Shivers against Alan Shivers and you're saying, oh, I don't have a preference.
Exactly.
Yeah, no one's got a preference, mate. They're all Alan Shivers.
In fairness, that should have been 100% no preference, shouldn't it? But Texas law later removed that option. So now you don't have a chance to do no preference anymore.
Sensible. I think that's sensible. That's
so,
very funny.
Alan Shivers, very popular, massive racist.
Oh.
Said that segregation of black and white people was God's will and no law could supersede it. And he also said that being a communist should be punishable by death and that being a communist was worse than murder.
Right.
I always enjoy it on Fish where we have a really funny, lighthearted chat about someone and then the person who's got the information says, anyway, massive racist and...
Can I move us north of the border to Canada for another fact?
Yes, please.
This is from Julie Pithers And Julie writes, Canadian scientists are currently collecting people's toenails. thousands of them as well. Thousands and thousands of sets of toenails the Canadian scientists want.
For? Science.
For science. They're going to be melting them down, apparently. It's really cool. Basically, 20% of Canadians live in homes which have slightly unsafe levels of radon.
Oh, yeah.
Which is a gas. It can cause cancer. Yeah. And it occurs naturally as well. It's basically if you live in places which have uranium in the soil or the rocks, and it can break down. Normally, it's fine if you live out in the open, but most people don't live out in the open. Most people live in homes. And if it's in an enclosed space in a house, it can cause some damage.
It's the same reason as why radiation levels are higher in coal mole than anywhere
exactly.
else in the UK.
Exactly. And there's a doctor called Aaron Goodazi who's looking into this, trying to find the causes of lung cancer in high radon environments, because it can cause lung cancer, which is very obviously very harmful. And you need toenails because they're an archive of past exposure yes. to radon. Your body takes in
really?
Radon, it turns it into a kind of lead, and then it just sort of shoves it into the slowly shedding tissues. So we're talking skin and hair and fingernails and toenails. And about 10,000 Canadians, I believe, are being recruited to test their homes for radon and then send in their clippings.
Wow,
she's good.
Cool.
Yeah.
Do you know, I read this the other day. Do you know what percentage of rocks contain uranium on Earth?
Oh, is it? What, all right. It's either going to be all of them or none of them.
Do you mean percentage per rock or how many rocks globally?
Okay. Well, interestingly, the percentage per rock is almost zero, and the percentage of rocks globally is almost 100%.
Yes!
So Andy was basically right on both of his two guesses.
Nice.
But yeah, because uranium is basically inside the earth, almost every single rock that you pick. If you pick up a stone on the side of the road, it's probably got a tiny, tiny, tiny trace of uranium in it.
Good Lord.
Isn't that amazing? I didn't know that.
That is really amazing. Yeah, yeah. If you live in Devon or Cornwall, you can put a detector in your home, which is about the size of a biscuit, and test it. That's fun. Yeah.
I would make it a size and shape of something that you don't eat.
It's not shaped like a hobnob, I believe.
It's got chocolate on one side. Okay, well, that is enough of your facts. Absolutely brilliant, as every week. Thank you so much to everyone who sent those in. And if you have a fact yourself, then do send it to podcast@qi.com. But we have not come to the end of this week's show, because before we do that, we have to give out some facts. If you become a member of our Patreon at the Friend of the Podcast tier, then you will immediately be assigned a fact. You will slightly less immediately be sent a certificate, and you might be even less immediately than that mentioned on the show. But we will get round to you all. And who is the first person we're getting round to today? Andy.
This one goes out to Kate Armstrong. Congratulations, Kate. Welcome to Friend of the Podcast here. It's that Alexander the Great banned beards in battle to combat beard pulling, which is apparently the scourge of the Macedonian. I wouldn't have thought it was a major problem.
No, because you think once someone gets close enough to pull your beard, if you have a sword, you might have a way to stop them. Just cut off your beard.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but that was his innovation. And look, the guy was the terror of three continents or whatever, so I'm not going to gainsay him. Well done, Alexander.
Yeah, at the age of 30, he had no more worlds to conquer.
Exactly, exactly. So he probably knew what he was doing with the beard stuff.
Dan, what have you got for us?
This is a fact for Bo. Congratulations, Bo. This is a fact of mine, which is that psychopaths don't experience contagious yawning like the rest of us.
See, I'm now yawning.
James just yawned.
Yeah.
I think it was a fake yawn
to see if we're
psychopaths.
It started off, I thought I'll do a fake one for comedic purposes, not realizing that this is a podcast medium and people won't be able to see that. But actually, halfway through, it turned into a real one.
Oh, well, there we go.
Fake it till you make it.
Very nice.
I experience a lot of contagious yawning. In fact, I experience yawning contagiously so much that I think I'm especially unusually empathetic.
Just very tired.
Yeah.
It has happened a lot more since you had children, I have to say.
Yeah, that's true. Contagious napping, it turns out, is also a real thing in meetings.
And contagious meltdowns, apparently.
Shut up, Dan.
I can't quite remember where we got that fact from. It was either John Ronson, who had written the psychopath test, or it was Kevin, a professor called Kevin.
Sounds legit.
Yes, and he wrote a book on psychopaths. And I once had dinner with Kevin, along with Terry Jones of Monty Python. What a table.
Clang.
And and he told me that he was working with Andy McNab to train the England football squad to not change their decision on where they were kicking a penalty goal right at the last second. They were brought in as psychologists to say, make your decision and stick to it. Because apparently that was a problem within the squad.
I'm sorry, Dan. Professor Kevin is working with Andy McNab of the SAS.
Thank you, yes.
To help the England football squad not change a decision on a penalty.
Yes.
And it's worked. When was the last time we lost a penalty shootout? It's a long time ago. You know when people say to you, like, what's your ideal dinner party?
Yeah.
I always say, Dan Schreiber, Terry Jones from Monty Python, and Professor Kevin. They're my three.
But not McNab. Oh dear, James. He's not going to be happy. He's going to be bursting in through the windows halfway through the starters.
Well, he's got so many annoying things he needs to happen. He needs the room to be lit black where he's sitting so you can't see his face. He needs that vocoder thing so that he talks in a different voice. He's a nightmare to have over at dinner. Yeah. Interestingly, they didn't get to find out that World Cup whether or not it worked because it never went to penalty shootouts.
England lost, didn't they? Bravo 2-0.
Thank you.
Thank you. That's the name of Andy McNab's book.
Very good.
Nice. And it's Kevin Dutton. It's just come back to me. Kevin Dutton.
Kevin Dutton. Okay, here is a fact that is now in the possession of Keith Baxter. Keith, your fact is that the Big Bang was quieter than a Motorhead concert. Interestingly, Andy, you spelt Motorhead without the umlaut.
That's not intentional, and I'm very sorry. We will have to get that certificate corrected, Kevin. Or Keith, for that matter. We'll have to get... Keith, I know your name. I just spelt Motorhead wrong. No, this is because it's all based off my ancient record keeping. And
in
sometimes...
fairness, Andy, like your record keeping, like we use this spreadsheet in order to check that we haven't done facts before.
Yeah.
And it would be correct to spell that without the umlaut, I think, because I'm never going to search Motorhead with an umlaut.
Oh, yes.
Good point. So wait, the Big Bang was quieter than a Motorhead concert?
Yeah, Motorhead, 126 decibels. And the Big Bang, apparently, 120 decibels, according to people who have studied the background radiation of the universe.
It's insane that we know that or think we know that.
Yeah. Let's go on to our next fact. So whose turn is it?
It's mine. This one goes out to George Wade. And it's a great one. It's that Pixar accidentally deleted Toy Story 2 halfway through making it.
Fantastic.
Yeah. This was an Alex Bell fact.
Yes. Basically, they deleted it. The only thing that remained was one person who'd gone on maternity leave, and she had a computer at home that was kind of separated from the rest of the system. And so I think they basically drove the computer in under extreme caution.
Mm.
Like just strapped it in the back of a car or whatever and coddled it until it got in because that had almost everything on it.
So yeah, so she had an early saved version.
Yeah.
You wouldn't be able to do that these days, obviously. Getting in touch with people on maternity leave is very much a no-no.
Toy Story 5 has ground to a halt for the next 9 months.
Dan, let's go on to the next one.
Yeah, well, we're moving on to episode 24. So that was episode 23 to all the custodians of the last four facts. And this one is for Ronnie. You are now the custodian of the fact that when he was bored, President Calvin Coolidge would ring a bell to summon bodyguards and then hide under the Oval Office desk. Was Coolidge the person who also... Oh, God, there were so many eccentric presidents that did very odd things in the White House, like the showerhead... Was that Coolidge or was that someone else?
That was LBJ, was it?
That was LBJ, it was. That's
right. He had a shower head directed at his genital area.
Yes.
Yeah. Coolidge is the one who never said anything. He was very much the opposite of the current incumbent. He just barely said three words. You know, there's that story that someone went to dinner with him, sort of flirtatious young woman who said, "Oh, President Coolidge, I've made a bet with my friends that I could get you to say just three words tonight." And he just said to her, "You lose." And then said nothing for the rest of the evening.
Very good. Okay, the next fact comes from someone whose name could be made up of two US presidents, Andrew Jackson and Jimmy Carter, because it's Andrew Carter. And your fact is that until 2011, the sun was only, in theory, a sphere. Dan, this is yours.
Yeah. I love this about science, whereas they knew it was a sphere because that, by all indications, is what it was. However, until two probes were sent around to either side of it, twin probes, they couldn't officially confirm that it was a sphere, and that's what this did. They said, "It's confirmed. We've seen it. We've actually seen it from the other side, yeah, with two different probes." So I just love that about science.
I'll do one. This goes out to Erin Eldridge. Congratulations, Erin. Your fact is that some birds' nests contain over 100 rooms and weigh up to 1,000 kilos and cause trees to collapse.
Rubbish.
It's true. 100 rooms. This is a bird called the sociable weaver, and it basically has these ginormous nests.
Well, it needs them. It's so sociable.
Yeah, exactly.
It's up for parties.
It's like Dan's house, the description of this bird's nest.
How many kids does it have in there?
Yeah, but it's very cool. I think I've seen pictures of them where they're absolutely ginormous and they're just a permanent sort of palace.
Amazing. And Dan, last one for the day?
The last one goes to Rohan Singh, and this is a James Harkin fact. It is the worst baseball team in South Korea has replaced its supporters with robots.
Brilliant.
Yeah, the Hanwha Eagles. They lost 400 games in the last 5 years, and that's as of recording from 2015, I believe. And they are nicknamed the Hanwha Chickens. So they've put up screens, and you can put up your photo on the screen, and you can do things like Mexican waves and chants along with it as you're watching the match. But yeah, Hark, do you remember more on this?
No, I don't remember anything about them. And I thought, since we're doing this on Zoom, I can quickly check and see if they've won any games recently.
Yes.
And in 2025, they had a record of played 144, won 83. So actually, yeah, they've improved quite a lot, I would say.
Wow.
Oh, well, there we go.
So good old Hanwha Eagles.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that is the end of the show. Thank you so much to everyone who sent a fact in. Thank you especially to Rohan, Erin, Andrew, Ronnie, George, Keith, Beau, and Kate, who are new custodians of facts in our friend of the podcast tier. And if you would like to do that yourself, go to patreon.com/nosuchthingasafish, and you will find details of how to join our many tiers. We have more tiers than a cinema at the end of Toy Story 2.
Lovely.
Does that work? I haven't seen it. But you can find everything on there and more. And if you'd like to hear more from us, then come back on Friday when we will have a regular episode of No Such Thing as a Fish. In the meantime, it's goodbye from me. It's goodbye from Andy.
Bye.
And it's goodbye from Dan.
So long.
Just trying to do my audition for University Challenge. Bye.